Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
All right, today's podcast is supported by Wix.com. There's a better way to build websites for your clients, and that is with Wix. Harness the latest web technology and innovative design tools to deliver, yes, professional results. You start with a blank page and then you design the layout that you want. Grow your business online, your custom online store, your out-of-the-box booking system, and even have live chat. Publish in a click and make fast edits. You will enjoy enterprise-grade security and automatic web hosting. Also, SEO and powerful marketing tools to drive traffic to your site. So please get started with your website today. Go to wix.com/believe. That's W-I-X, wix.com/believe. Wix, scale your web business. All right, let's start.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Oh, hello, he Mr. is. Bisping. Hello. Nice glasses. See, fucking nerd.
See, this is what I expected from you. This is what I expected. I mean, I have an eye condition. We know this. I have needed glasses since 10 years old. I've run out of contact lenses right now, so I have got no choice. If I want to see whilst doing the show, I have to wear the glasses. I'll take them off on occasion, perhaps to look more distinguished. Perhaps sometimes I'll put them on. I'll be like, let me take a closer look. But you're wearing them purely for fashion. I don't bust your balls. I don't talk shit. You know, but I put my glasses on, and what do I get? Ridiculed instantly. You need to grow up, Lewis.
If our production team had the ability, I would have them do a smash cut right now of you trashing me for the way I look. We would just do an entire hour just in a row of you just calling me every name under the sun. And yeah, I like the glasses. First of all, I told you to wear them because it looks good. You look like Clark Kent. You take them off, Superman. Put them back on, Clark Kent. You got to take them off more dramatically,
though. I'm definitely wearing them. Lewis, you're full of shit. I've been bigging you up recently. I'm like, wow, you look good. You're glowing. Your skin looks good. You know, your boldness has a certain, you know, I want to lick your head. You know what I mean? You're looking good right now, buddy. You know what I mean? I am not trashing you, and I can't see, so I got to wear the glasses. You know what I mean? So leave me alone. Come on.
I like it, but I feel like one of those frames is sort of unnecessary. Why don't you get a monocle? Just get a fucking old, like the peanut, Mr. Peanut.
I'll be honest. I Googled monocles recently. I did because I wanted to get one just for a laugh. I Googled it they're not easy to find. They are not easy to find. But if I want to look at anything on my laptop, I'm going to have my glasses on. So I'll leave them on for the sake of it, even though you're going to ridicule me. It's pouring down with rain here, Lewis. Absolutely pouring down. And believe it or not, I know you like to think that I live in a half mansion that's very grandiose. We are leaking. We are leaking. It's coming through the lights. We have buckets in place catching the water. It's like we've gone back in time to some time when houses leaked or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're still in a half mansion. You know, it's still fine. You are doing very well. Maybe you got to get up on that roof. You got to fix some stuff yourself. I don't know.
No.
But it doesn't really rain. It truly doesn't rain often in LA. I remember one time I was there, it was torrential downpour, and people were talking about it. It was like the whole thing for like a week. People were like, do you remember the other day where it was raining like crazy? So I guess it's truly like that. If people aren't from the West Coast or from California, you guys don't really deal with a ton of rain.
No, it is. It's frustrating for me. Obviously, being an Englishman, it rains all the time. So we're used to driving in the rain. You know, I'll still do 100 miles an hour on the motorway, you know, in England with the wipers going like crazy. And no one cares. You know what I mean? Everybody's used to driving. A little bit of rain in California. Oh, my God. They slow down, you know, and they drive very, very cautiously. But I get it. I understand now. because the tarmac that the roads are laid from, in my opinion, I haven't Googled this or anything, but I would assume that they are of a different consistency. You know what I mean? Because they have to deal with the heat. In England, they have to deal with the rain, because I think a lot of oil releases from the tarmac in the rain, because I went around the corner here and I did slip. You know what I mean? But you're right. It is a big deal here. It's on the news. It's all people talk about when it rains here. And as I mentioned recently, Rebecca's parents were here and it was leaking then. And Graham, Beck's dad, he's, you know, he loves to, if there's a job to be done around the house, he wants to do it. I'm very much the opposite. I'm like, Graham, it doesn't rain in California. Just let it leak for today, and then the rain will stop, and then we'll never, maybe one day next year, it'll leak again, but I am not getting on the roof. I am not paying somebody to do it.
Yeah, it really is like, if it only happens once or twice a year, it's not really a problem. I've been in a few little silly hydroplaning accidents before, you know. Safe driving out there, everyone. Believe you me, we are here. We're back. We're back in a very, very big way. We have a lot to talk about. It's not even a big news week in the world of MMA, but somehow we've put these notes together and it's really come together. I know that you are, you're celebrating. There's a festive tone in the air. I hear you and Beck going back and forth. It feels like it's Christmas in the Bisping Half Mansion. Did you put your two trees up yet?
The trees are up. The two trees are up, but that started with, you know, because I was saying to you, I want to change this room and turn it into a better studio. But this was the games room. Not a better studio, but just a better setup. A better setup for a podcast. Fuck off.
That's not what I'm saying.
Say it. Go ahead.
Let me say. So he called me yesterday, and it's really funny. Bisping does not like talking on the phone to me. And we've talked about this before, because I'm like a bat out of hell. Like, he calls me, and then the way my mind races, I start listing off things, because we don't talk. Sometimes we don't talk about the show until we're on the show, and I feel like we have to get shit done. Sometimes we got to make some decisions. I still don't know how to fucking pay you for the YouTube ads. It's been weeks. We're never gonna figure it out. Okay.
Hey, that's pretty simple. Send me the money. That's all you gotta do.
A check in the mail, a fucking cash, a cashier check. No, I'm gonna Google. I'm gonna Amazon pay you or.
Any of them work? Any which way you just said? Apple Pay, check, cash. Cash is good. I like cash, but anyway works. Here's the thing. I called you yesterday, and for everybody listening, I called Lewis, and you're right, because I called him. I asked him some questions. He said, I'll call you back in a minute, and I never picked up. Right? Number one, because this thing of putting up the trees, and we've got Rebecca's brother is coming soon with his wife and their children, and they haven't been here in a long, long time. So Rebecca wants the house all nice. So we're trying to declutter, you know, just have a spring clean, basically, whilst putting up two trees, whilst putting up the Christmas decorations, whilst sorting out Lucas's bedroom, whilst figuring out the landing upstairs, whilst figuring out the games room, because one thing leads to the other. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the entire house upside down. And then I called Lewis. I said, listen, I'm just going to move things around. If you got anything you don't want me to do, And then just a simple, that'll be fine, Michael, just do this. He's talking about installing DSLR lines. He's talking about this. He's fucking going out of his mind. I'm like, Lewis, I just called for a very, very quick, have you got anything that you don't want me to do? No, we're going to get a technician. We're going to get a producer. We're going to do this. It's going to cost a lot of money. He's talking about $3,000 cameras that zoom in. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Gotta go. Call you back in a minute. And I put the phone down. And then 5 minutes later, it rings. I'm standing here just like this. I look at it. Lewis. I'm like, I go, hold on. What was the text I sent? Let's have a look. What did I say? Hold on. Lewis. I said, carrying a computer table upstairs.
What a lie. A bold-faced lie. He had nothing in his hands.
How am I going to text if I'm carrying a computer table upstairs? I never thought about that at the time. But I did carry a computer table upstairs. I did carry a lot of things. I carried a Peloton bike upstairs by myself with a bad knee. As I was getting to the top of the stairs, I'm walking up the stairs with this Peloton bike. Listen, they said the last thing to go is the strength. Bro, I'm still strong. I might wear glasses and have one leg and one knee and one eye these days, but I can carry a fucking Peloton bike upstairs just after having a new knee installed. But I got near the top, and I was near the top, and I was in just socks. Right? And I was like, oh, shit. I almost fell backwards, head first, down the stairs with like a 400-pound Peloton bike on top of me. I would have been dead. I would have been dead, Lewis.
Imagine that's the way you become paralyzed. Like, it wasn't years of fighting in a cage. It wasn't doing dangerous jobs, being a fucking, being a young man, just living your life like a goddamn wild animal. It's all said and done. You've made it. You're in the Bisping Half Mansion. And like an idiot, you wore socks on hardwood floors and you slipped and fell down and killed yourself. What a way to go.
I predict these things.
You can't predict these things.
Shut up, Connor. That would be a stupid way to go.
So you put up your trees. I tried to fucking order a tree. I did order a tree. I had my assistant, Catherine. I was like, hey, this is what I want. I want a tree. Okay. I want a tree with lights already built in, artificial tree. I don't want to have to deal with fucking having needles all over my house anymore. I live on a fourth floor walk up as well. So I pin needles the entire way up the stairs. It's a nightmare. Okay. So I was like, give me a tree. I have storage in my apartment. I'll put it up once a year. Perfect. She orders one. The company sends a toy train by mistake. Now, the company, when we reached out, in my mind, I'm going, all right, cool. I guess my kid's got an extra toy train now. Send me my fucking tree.
Easy mistake to make. What? Like a Christmas tree, and they give you a toy train instead. I mean, you can see the confusion.
Train? Tree.
Tree. Yeah. First two letters are the same.
If you just say train and tree real quick, you know.
That's why a lot of the times when I go to say Lucas after doing the show, I say Lewis. Same thing. Lucas, Lewis, you know?
I thought it's because you consider me family.
Yeah.
I like Lewis.
How you been? How you been today?
We hit them back. I don't hit them back. I tell my assistant, I'm like, all right, I don't fucking care. First of all, stop bothering me with these details. Have them send my tree. She contacts them. They said, we're going to send the tree after he sends the toy train back. Then we have to get it, receive it, then reissue the tree 7 to 10 business days to send me the tree that I had already paid for. So I won't get a tree until December 15th, 10 days for Christmas. So then we say, fuck you. Give me a refund. Now I won't give him the train back out of principle. I'm not giving this fucking train back. I'm going to burn the train and send him a video of me burning the fucking train.
You are keeping that train, but there's an old expression, an old Chinese proverb that I live my life by. You know, it's kind of one of my codes. If you want something done properly, you got to do it yourself. Okay. This is the pitfalls of having an assistant. Mm. Maybe she heard train. Hi, assistant that I'm going to speak down to. I'd like a new train. I'd like this. And she's like, fucking Lewis wants a train. And she's like, I don't know what he wants a fucking train for, but there you go. And here's
what type of asshole would order a Christmas train? Okay, fine. Yeah. Christmas train.
He's fucking Puerto Ricans. They're crazy. we need to devise the BYM drinking game that we do a shot every time Lewis says, my assistant. I asked my assistant. I don't know if you've noticed this in the comments, Lewis. People are sounding off on all the assistant talk. You're going downhill. And maybe we'll do a shot every time I say 100%. Because I know I'm not perfect either.
Fine. Well, that's it. Well, no, it can't be a shot because we will kill our audience within a half a show. So it can't be a shot. Why don't we do, Harrington, you know what? This is it. And this is going to be for next Monday's show. We're going to do the BYM drinking game. We're going to print the rules and post it to the BYM Twitter beforehand. So when the show comes out, we'll do a bunch of random things that we say, do. But me and you can't know the triggers and the things that will make people drink. Because if we know, then we can sort of... So Harrington and Brian have to put together the rules, and there'll be a list of things that you have to drink for, two shot, whatever it is. And it has to be beer. We can't fucking, you know.
Well, guys, quick question. If we come up with the rules and you guys do them without knowing it, can we tell you to drink?
Yeah, me and Bisping have to do it as well. We'll play the drinking game.
Do you mean live on air?
100%. Drink.
Yes.
Anytime anybody says 100%.
Finally, the type of show I want to be a part of, you know. I was trying to get on Fox when we worked at Fox Sports. We do all these shows. I'm like, listen, we should do this with a few beers. They're like, Mike, we can't allow that. And then when we do Tough Talk after the Ultimate Fighter, we'd sit around a table and talk about the show. I said, we should do this over a few beers, make it nice and casual. Lose the suits. You know what I mean? We're all fighters at the end of the day. Lose the suits, have a glass of wine, maybe a beer, whatever, and just make it nice and casual. They're like, no. Finally, the BYM. All right, I'm down. So what they're even though I don't drink anymore, I'll do this. This is my level of commitment to the show, Lewis. It's crazy.
We're going to do that Monday. And then I also just had another brilliant idea that I want to produce with you.
Hold on. I don't want to be smashed at 12:30 in the day, though. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe if we do it Tuesday night, I can do it. So this way, you know, you're not.
We'll figure it out.
We're doing it for sure. In the next show, we will have a BYM drinking game. Get prepared, baby boys. Right. You're going to get fucking up. Have a beer by your side for the next show. Here's what I want to do. So, do you remember that thing they did on HBO with a bunch of comedians? It was Louis C.K., Ricky Gervais, Chris Rock, whoever else it was. It was four comedians. Remember who else the last guy was? Whoever. It doesn't matter. Seinfeld.
Right.
And they did like a four-part, for lack of a better term, it was a podcast. Just, you know, and they sat down and they just talked about whatever it was. These issues, it was an hour and a half,
yeah,
an hour.
Yeah.
No, it was good.
I've seen it. So go on. Carry on.
I want to do that with you and Chael. And like, we'll pick like three or four guys that are really good on mic, where you guys just sit down and do like a four-part series where you like just whatever, break down the new generation of fighters. You break down fucking, you know, bigger topics, not news specific, but is that not a brilliant idea? That'd be so good.
Well, it's a great idea. You know, I mean, certain things, you know, number one, it's been done many times. Number one, I'm doing that soon, a round table for the UFC the day after the fights, the next pay-per-view, myself, Daniel Cormier, and a few others. We're sitting around, we're having a few drinks, and we're talking about the best fights of the year. Thirdly, I mean, that is a great idea, Lewis, but, you know, you got to fly DC and you got to fly Chael and you got to get Conor McGregor. Do you think these people are just readily available just to, like, give up? Hold on, I'll call them right now. DC, yeah, Lewis has come up with a great idea. You're going to come and do our show. You're going to give up whatever you're doing. You're going to fly to us. We're going to give you some alcohol, give you some beer, though. The guy's a champ, or former champ.
I agree
with
you, Mike.
Should I say? Exactly, Daniel. You know what I mean? It's a great idea, but the reality of carrying it out, Lewis, is not going to happen.
Wow. If you think that's the insurmountable hill that I can't get past, which is getting Daniel Cormier to do something on a fucking camera. Are you in your mind? Do you think that Chris Rock isn't busier than Daniel Cormier? Do you think that fucking Jerry Seinfeld doesn't have shit going on? Yeah, dude, you get paid, you get a sponsor, you get a little bit of cash, you get some nice cameras. It's a great piece of content. Why are you going to tear down my ideas, Michael Bisping? Drink. Every time Michael Bisping tears down one of my ideas, you got to drink three shots.
All right, okay, listen. Okay, I'll drink the three shots, but here we go. Make it happen, Lewis. Make it happen. Make it happen. I'll be here. I'll be here waiting. I'm signed on. I'm in. I'm down for it.
Good.
But it's not going to happen. Maybe it will. Maybe it will one day. Hold on. I dropped my glasses.
I thought you were quitting the show. I'm done. I'm done with the show. Hey, Mike, before we get into the fights, let's just take a quick moment and talk about BetDSI, which is such an incredible company. We love BetDSI. They make watching fights that much more exciting. If you don't know what they are a gambling site, probably been in business for longer than most other sites, over 20 years, and they're top rated on business review sites. They have a fast playing interface, 24/7 customer service. If you're putting your money anywhere, you want to be able to speak to somebody if you have some cash down on something. BetDSI is the place to do it.
Yeah, of course. This weekend, we've got great fights. Obviously, the UFC's been away for a little while. They come back with a fantastic card. And of course, in the main event, a tremendous heavyweight fight, if you ask me. Alistair Overeem taking on Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Okay, this is a great fight between two excellent kickboxers. And if you want to get involved, go to BetDSI.com. Take a look at them. Have a look at the odds. Harrington, what are the odds from BetDSI on this one, please?
Alistair Overeem is the slight favorite, -120. Rozenstruik is even odds.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, for my money, I mean, I'll break down the fight later, but I've got a sneaky feeling about Rozenstruik. If you have a sneaky feeling or you feel that Overeem's going to win it due to his experience, whichever way you want to slice, BetDSI.com is the site you want to use, because if you use the promo code BYM120, up to $1,000, they'll give you a 60% bonus cash, which would turn $1,000 into $1,600 and so on and so forth. And when you play the game, you got some options. You can just play and cash out, or you can take the bonus dollars, which is like getting a casino comp up front because you played the tables. It has a rollover requirement, but it is free cash. Listen, BetDSI.com is the way to go. Put some money on, enjoy the fights, and be on the edge of your seat, because you might get rich if you listen to what I say. So BetDSI.com, that is the website you want to use. BYM120 is the code that you want to use. You will get a 60% bonus cash match, which will see you earn a lot of money, Lewis. So, all right.
So
what's going on anyway? We got tons of fight stuff going on in the world, and also we got big fights this weekend, and we got a big boxing fight this weekend. We will talk about that in a little bit. We'll get into all the fight stuff, but something going on with Chris Pratt. I know you love these good-looking Hollywood types. You know, you follow Chris Pratt closely. I know Jason Momoa was one of your favorite. You like those big Hawaiian Islander types, those South Pacifics. You know, what is going on? Because you're dying to talk about them. I just know you are.
This is
Hollywood
nothing,
heartthrobs.
This has nothing to do with Hollywood heartthrobs, Michael Bisping. This has to do with Hollywood phonies. And I noticed a parallel here between you and Jason Momoa. And no, it's not your bulging biceps or the fact that you're Hollywood elite. It is the fact that you're both Hollywood phony assholes. And it needs to be pointed out. It needs to be said.
Whoa. What the fuck are you talking about? Both Hollywood phony assholes. I wish I was a Hollywood phony asshole, okay? You can't put me in the same sentence as those two people. I wish I could, and I will drop you in a fucking heartbeat, Mr. fucking round table. I'm getting DC jail. What the fuck?
I never said DC, by the way. He wasn't even on my mind. I was thinking like fucking only guys who beat
Enlightened.
You. Only guys who beat you is you and Vitor.
Vitor, Castellone,
fucking GSP. Yeah. And they all talk about how they beat you. And that's a go. We'll do a 4-part series, 6 hours, an hour and a half per show.
Get fucked. All right, carry on.
So,
we're both, myself and Jason Momoa, we're both phony Hollywood assholes. Elaborate, please.
Okay, so pull up this story, Harrington. So what happened? Jason Momoa called out Chris Pratt, I think publicly on Instagram, which, I mean, if you're friends with a guy, I think these guys know each other. No reason to do it on Instagram, but what did he, all right, so he tweeted a picture of Chris Pratt, and he said, bro, I love you, but what the fuck, on the water bottle, no single-use plastic, come on. So he called him out, Chris Pratt, on Instagram for using single-use plastic, which is honestly, yep, for me, I don't give Riley a shit about the earth, obviously, but Michael Bisping, he truly cares. And I know you feel very passionate about this. You gave up single-use plastic years ago. You haven't used a single-use plastic bottle. I mean, I've never seen you use one. So you agree with Momoa for calling out his friend Chris Pratt on the internet?
Yes, I do. 100%. Listen, love you, bro. Okay, first of all, it started off giving a nice compliment.
That's how you have to criticize somebody.
Very politely said, yeah, you start off with a nice compliment. It's, hey, you're great, but, you know. Listen, Lewis, I don't know if you know this, right? And it pisses me off. And you brought this up, by the way. And if everybody gets pissed off with me saying this, because I know a lot of people say what you say, oh, Bisping's going to Hollywood, stop hanging around in LA with these liberals and blah, 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 blah. I don't hang around with people like that. I sit in my house. I very, very rarely leave the house. I don't do much these days, okay? But, you know, this piece of plastic, this cup or a beaker, as I like to call it, this beaker that I am holding right now, this will be here way after we are dead. 500 years to 1,000 years, that will take to biodegrade, right? So every single piece of plastic, all the gifts that we're going to get this year, all the trashy plastic gifts, all the plastic toys, they are somewhere. They don't disappear. There are beaches and things like that in the ocean, right? We're just piled high with plastic. It's sad. We just got to make a change. That's all, Lewis. And if you want to mock me and you want to mock Jason Momoa for trying to do the right thing to invest in our future, our children's future, our great-grandchildren's future, I mean, I personally, I believe the children are our future, and I want to look after them.
Did you just give me Michael Jackson lyrics in the middle of your speech?
I did. I went, what was it? Coming to America. I believe the children are our future. Anyway, but yeah, good on Jason Momoa. Good on him.
Oh, that's good on Houston. Him. Sorry. Fine. But when you when you're that famous, with great power comes great responsibility, Michael Bisping. Okay, and whereas we are busting each other's balls and we fuck with each other back and forth, I would never tweet out if I saw you using single-use plastic. I would never tweet out, Michael Bisping, how dare you? Just like you shouldn't do it for me. You should call me up and be like, hey, dude, you know what? Single-use plastic, not cool. Not in my household. You want to continue to do this podcast? Well, how about you fucking chill out and you get a metal straw. Like the rest of us, okay? And
or, and I put this on my story, on my Instagram story yesterday, three pictures. One guy using a shitty cardboard straw. Other guy using a $20 metal straw. Third guy, real genius, no straw. You don't need to drink through a straw. In fact, when I'm at a bar and they give me a drink, if I order a cocktail and they give me the straws, first thing I do, nothing to do with the plastic, I take the straw out and I throw it on the floor or on the bar. I leave it there because I'm not going to stand in the bar sipping on my drink, okay? Mm. Sipping on my drink through a straw. No, I drink my drink like a man, okay? Like a man should drink it from the glass.
I just feel like there is you have a responsibility to your friend to not have the troll brigade start coming after you. You know, so he should have just said, hey, you know what? Let me call this guy and say that. And to be honest with you, the problem is he doesn't even give a fuck, Jason Momoa. All he's doing is he is showing off for the masses that he cares. And he takes a moment. And in that moment, to prop himself up, it's fucking bully mentality. He's tearing somebody else down. So he actually apologized. I'm assuming there was a big, I'm assuming Chris Pratt got a lot of shit. I don't think Jason Momoa got a lot of shit. I think people are probably threatening Chris Pratt's life. They're fucking sending him pictures of turtles with straws in their nose. And Chris Pratt had to deal with a lot of bullshit. So this is what Jason Momoa tweeted after the fact. This is, I guess, a picture of them. He said, Pratt, bro, you know my children and I are madly in love with you, and I love everything you do. I'm sorry this was received so badly today. I didn't mean for that to happen. I'm just very passionate about single-use plastic epidemic. The plastic water bottles have to stop. He keeps going. He fucking keeps. He can't stop being an asshole.
He can't stop it. He said, listen, I love you. But realistically, you are a fucking asshole. Do you know what you're doing to this planet? You motherfucker, okay? You're rich enough to drink out of a different hydro flask every day of the week, okay? You can have a hydro flask every day of the month, you rich motherfucker, but you still use the single-use plastics. Yeah, you know, he shouldn't have done that. I had a similar situation once. I won't mention any names because I don't want to bring it back up.
I know what you're talking about, by the way.
Yeah, don't bring it up. Don't bring it up I like my job. But yeah, you know, somebody did that to me. They threw me under a bus publicly when they could have just sent me a text.
For no reason. But for no reason at all. It's almost like, you know, yeah, I had that happen to me once. A friend of mine who's a comedian who a fan asked me something about him and I just kind of tweeted back saying my opinion, which wasn't, you know, whatever it was. It was without getting too specific, I guess I said, I don't know why this guy always throws other guys under the bus, whatever. And that guy hit me up and he was like, yeah, dude, he's like, why don't you just call me? Why would you tweet at some motherfucker that we don't know? If you have a problem with something that I do, just say it, you know, and we'll have a conversation separately. Maybe I'm wrong, but now you're even way more wrong. I think calling out your friend online for using a plastic bottle and to get, you know, millions of followers to probably be saying fucked up shit to him and trashing him, that is way worse than using a plastic bottle, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Plastic bottles are accepted. Bad behavior isn't. But, you know, we don't want to bore everyone to death. I know you're obsessed with Hollywood culture and you're calling me a stupid Hollywood elite. But, you know, you're trying to get there, Lewis. And one day you will. One day it'll be you talking about the plastic bottles. Okay. Never. I'm willing to put some money on this. One day. Bro, in our fucking lifetime, the world is going to shit. Okay. 2050, in 30 years' time, this world is going to be a terrible place if we don't make changes right now. But we'll leave that there. We'll leave that there, and we'll switch to my wheelhouse. And now I'm putting on the glasses for effect.
Very
okay?
Nice.
Because now I really know what I'm talking about, okay?
Just please.
I want to start. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I really like you're using your glasses as sort of like a... the right way. It's like you pull them off dramatically when you want to make a really dramatic point. You pull them down when you want to, you know, look a little bit more intelligent. It's good. Maybe you put them like sideways on your head, like you're frazzled. Yeah.
What's going on with this podcast?
Oh. I blew Bisping's mind.
all right, listen. Let's get into some of these MMA stuff. But here's what I want us to talk about, because it's a good conversation piece. Nate Marquardt. Nate the Great Marquardt. Remember him?
Yeah, I honestly, Nate Marquardt, I was a fan of Nate's back in the day, and he was solid. He had to, honestly... never ended up doing super well in the UFC, sort of ended up middling, but, you know, nice bod.
Yeah, well, I was never a fan.
I know you hated him, right?
I wouldn't say I hated him. I don't hate, you know, I do hate some people, but I don't hate very many. It's a very short list with two people at the top of it that I would happily put a gun in there, blow their fucking brains out, no problem. But that said, Nate Marquardt will end retirement and come back to MMA because God told him to, right? And here's where I do have an issue. Because back in the day, Nate Marquardt said that I was bad for the sport. Okay, he did. He went out there. He did an interview. He said, Michael Bisping, he's terrible for the sport. He's, you know, because I used to talk a lot of shit back in the day. This was in the early days. And I'm like, how the fuck can you say that I'm bad for the sport when he's the guy out there failing multiple steroid tests? Okay. And he goes on about God all the time. And that's great. Listen, if you're a religious man, more power to you. You know, I respect everybody's beliefs. But here's why I have an issue with him. Every time he would lose a fight, and by the way, it became quite a frequent thing towards the end, Mr. Marquardt, he would say, it wasn't God's plan. It wasn't God's plan. Rather than saying, the better man beat me on the night, rather than saying I wasn't prepared, you know, correctly, I underestimated my opponent, I made a mistake, I got caught, man, I didn't think he was that good on the ground. You know, a plethora of reasons as to why one might lose a fight. Rather than any of them, he has the arrogance to say that it wasn't God's plan for him to win that fight. So totally eradicates himself of any responsibility for losing the fight, right? And it's just such utter bullshit. And that always left a bad taste in my mouth, especially when he said that I was bad for the sport. And now he's coming out of retirement because he says that God told him to. And I'm just looking for the quote here. He says, yeah, that's true. I'm making a comeback. I've known it for a while, but I haven't made it public. Well, it's kind of a crazy story, man, but I had a dream. God spoke to me and he confirmed it later in the week by two people I've never met before and one friend. And that's basically, I'll be fighting again. Here's the thing, Nate Marquardt. I think you need to see a doctor. You have voices in your head. I had voices in my head recently. There was a woman talking to me in my bedroom that wasn't there, but I was on a lot of pain medication, okay? That's good. That went. I'm not hearing voices anymore.
Sounds awesome. Nate Marquardt
has a one-on-one with God, and he's coming out of retirement at 40 years old. I think he lost his last 10 or something like that. What do you make of all this, Lewis?
I mean, yeah, look, anybody who's religious, just in general, and I don't want to trash our religious fan base because there are people that I feel bad because...
Me neither.
But I have a hard time, and I was raised Catholic, but just, I have a hard time taking it super seriously. So if one of my employees here, if one of the producers here came to us and was like, hey, dude, I got to go home... I got an email from Jesus and, you know, he just said, I got to get this shit. What are you talking about? Get back to work, you psycho. This is the real world. Ghouls and goblins don't exist. You don't get to use that as like a real tangible thing. If you want to use religion as a guiding light, you know, I think it's good. It's not a bad thing. But if you are, and it's not just in fighting, but I think you do sort of, you touched on that, which is excusing yourself from personal responsibility. And you say, well, it's God's plan, or I can simply, you know, say a Hail Mary and I can, you know, that's how I can, you know, that's sort of like, it's a very impractical thing to say, I'm going to go to church and I'm going to give confession and that's going to absolve me of these sins that I feel bad for. That's not very real. And it's not very tangible. It may make you feel better, but you're not actually having a conversation, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a God. But I think it would be better to actually go fix those wrongs that you've created by having real conversations with real people that you may have hurt versus saying, well, look, now I get to just feel good and I get to go to heaven now.
Listen, I might have gang raped them children, but it's okay because I got on my knees and I said 40 Hail Marys, 30 Our Fathers, and I really fucking meant it. And God has absolved me of all of my sins, so I'm good. Listen, you know, we have got to be careful because people are very passionate and rightly so, you know, and I respect people's religious beliefs. I do. And we've spoke about this before in a few times and I had people reach out to me and I responded to the messages and we had a respectful dialogue and, you know, they kind of apologized for coming at me so hard. So I was raised same as you. I was raised Catholic. So I respect everybody's religious beliefs. I just don't have them. I don't have them. But for him to say that it's not God's plan, listen, if there is a God, let's just say there is a God, you know, I'm open to suggestion. I will hear. I'll have a debate about it. If there is, do you really think that he's looking down at that one particular MMA match? He's going, oh, I've got a plan here. And oh, part of this plan, oh, it doesn't really involve Nate Marquardt winning this fight. I mean, I like Nate, and no, sorry. I'm trying to cause that tsunami in the South Pacific. And for that to happen, Nate Marquardt's going to have to lose this one. Sorry, Nate.
Let's just say, you know, benefit of the doubt, God exists. And let's just say, well, I'll even take it a step further, Michael Bisping. Let's say God is an MMA fan, right?
Okay.
What are the chances he gives a fuck about Nate Moorcourt? I mean, we got Khabib coming up. Connor's coming back. Do you think that God's fucking watching a Nate Moorcourt return fight at Bellator 245? Fuck off.
I'd be embarrassed if he did that.
Yeah.
We got Francis Ngannou. You know, we got Jair Rosenstruik this weekend taking on Alistair Overeem. If I'm God, listen, he's got the premium service. You know what I mean? If anyone's got the good pay-per-view in high def, it's the Lord Almighty upstairs, okay? And strike me down if that motherfucker hasn't got all the sound bars and surround sound and a movie theater to sit and enjoy them. He's not watching Nate Marquardt in that setup. No way.
God's got a setup like a Puerto Rican in the Bronx. It's just fucking just huge speakers just pounded out. Dude, God gets the Rogan seats. God gets to sit right behind Joe Rogan at the UFC events. Do you think he gives a fuck about what Nate Moorcourt, who was on a 3-fight losing streak, Nate, maybe get a fight or two under your belt and then God might be interested. I bet you can get God interested in your career again, but you got to get a couple wins under your belt first.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not here to shit all over Nate Moorcourt, even though he did shit all over me back in the day,
He didn't, Mike, because maybe what you're not realizing is you need to read deeper into the words that people use, because you said that. He said that you're bad for the sport. What was going on there, and this is absolutely the truth, is he was angling for a fight with you, and you're a commodity, and he's somebody that, you know, he said something to you that you took personally, and to be honest, maybe that fight could have materialized at one point. You gotta fix your glasses. I blew his mind again.
Listen.
If
Nate Marquardt could get together a decent win streak, perhaps that fight could have happened back in the day. It's not my fault he kept losing. I was looking for the biggest fights, the toughest fights, the most challenging fights. You know, that's why I took on Jason Miller. I'm kidding. Jason was tough. So Nate Marquardt, that just kind of, that rattled my cage a little bit there.
That's the new segment on the show. You know what rattles my cage? Can we get a sound effect for that? We'll give Bisp some that rattles Bisp's cage every week. Yeah.
Cage fighting, rattling the cage. Ooh.
Puerto Rican rattlesnake.
Good name for a podcast. The Puerto Rican I can't speak today. The Puerto Rican rattlesnake rattles the cage of Michael Bisping. Sounds like a porno.
Hey, Mike, really quick, let's talk about one of our incredible sponsors, which is Sellrite. This is an incredible gift for the holiday season, which is coming up very fast on us right now. If you're looking for the perfect gift, you can order from the comfort of your own home right now. And our friends at Sellrite, that is Sellrite, have the best holiday deals going right now at Sellrite.com. Basically, it's like having a personal massager in your house. The Sellrite device is a great little piece of molded plastic that mimics the shapes of a massage therapist's elbows and arms, and they get into certain little nooks and crannies of your body that you just wouldn't be able to do by yourself.
Yeah, that's right, because you know the parts of your body that need the attention. A massage doesn't necessarily know that, although they can feel. But the Sellrite, this piece of molded plastic, you put it down, it has some different peaks. As you say, kind of mimics the elbows and the forearms of a massage therapist. And, you know, I use this in the morning. I get out of bed, it's there, you know, because my back's been super tight lately. I'm trying to work on my mobility. Fortunately, now my knee is on the mend. I'm able to work out again. Now I'm really focusing on my body. So I get the Sellrite in the morning. I lie on there. I kind of just manipulate my body to the parts that need it. You know, it releases endorphins. I wake up, puts me in a great mood. You know, I use it on my stomach. It's been a great tool for reducing tension in my lower back as well, or the psoas muscle. No jokes, please, Lewis, although I'm sure you regularly have a psoas. But I know a lot of people here, they spend too much time sitting in offices. You know, they're getting a stiff lower back and they're just, you know, sitting using bad posture. Well, this will help you correct all of those things. And as you said, Christmas is around the corner, you know, so give the gift of mobility. Give the gift of released tension in the body. It's a lovely little tool. It really is. Small, compact, throw it in your suitcase. You can travel with it. And as I say, put it on the floor, roll around on it, find those parts that hurt and just kind of relieve that tension. And of course, with the holidays coming up, we have a fantastic offer. Lewis, tell the people.
All you have to do right now is go to sellrite.com. That is PSO-RITE.com, PSO-RITE.com. And right now, You can get 20% off your entire order by using the promo code BISPING20. BISPING20 is the promo code. Go to sellrite.com, PSO-RITE.com. Use that promo code. It's a great gift for your family members, friends, whoever it is in your life that you want to feel better. Yeah, and go enjoy.
All right, what should we do here? Should we go through these points that Harrington has here? Because you've done a great job, Harrington. We've got some good notes here. We've got lots of stuff. Should we go through them? Not in a quick hit style, but kind of in a quick hit style.
Let's see what we get through. I don't know if we need to necessarily get to everything on here. What about this? I mean, there's a big boxing match happening this weekend. Anthony Joshua versus Ruiz too. This is supposed to be a good fight. Anthony Joshua, he lost the last fight. He wasn't supposed to lose it, right? Maybe I'll watch it. I'm going to be in Detroit Saturday night, so yeah, maybe after the shows I'll go watch that. It could be fun.
The fight's on early. I think it might be on like the 1 o'clock California time or even 12:30, something like that, because the fight's happening in Saudi Arabia. I think it's Saudi Arabia. If I'm wrong there, I apologize. Yeah, the first fight, Anthony Joshua was supposed to take on someone else. I forget his name now. Then he tested positive for steroids. And they bring in Andy Ruiz, who was a gigantic underdog. And we all know what happened. If you don't, Ruiz won, knocked him out in the seventh round, something like that. He dropped Joshua four times. Joshua didn't look good. He looked out of it. He looked like he didn't want to continue. And I'm a massive fan of Anthony Joshua, but that's kind of how it went down. Big rematch this time. Joshua's coming in a little slimmer. Ruiz is coming in a little slimmer. There's no bad blood, but this is a big, big fight for Anthony Joshua. I mean, Andy Ruiz was kind of, I don't know, you know, it was kind of, well, I didn't know he even existed, put it like that. But now, you know, we're talking about him. Since then, you know, he's living life. I mean, I follow him on Instagram and he's, you know, he's enjoying the spoils that come with being champion of the world, certainly in heavyweight boxing. Those spoils are many, many, many millions of dollars. He's driving around in Rolls Royce Phantoms. He's got jewelry galore, bling for fucking days. You know, he better hope he wins this fight because he might not have paid taxes on that last one and he's spending a lot of money. A lot of people do this. A lot of fighters do this and it always blows my mind. I mean, listen, I don't know his financial affairs. You know what I mean? Good for him. God bless. Go and enjoy it. I couldn't care less. You know what I mean? I hope he does. And I'm all for fighters doing well, but a lot of fighters, they get a little bit of money and they spend it straight away. Do you know what I mean? Because they think it's going to come in forever, you know? And I kind of got sucked into that a little bit, but I never did anything extreme. You know what I mean? The most I ever did was get a fucking Maserati. That was a piece of shit.
You already had a family when you got money. And that's why, I'm not obnoxious either. It's not like I have a lot of money. I'm not a millionaire or anywhere near as successful as you even. But you had a family, you already had, you know, you were already had already been through some really bad times, not being able to pay your mortgage, not being able to, you know, get through the bills. And then when you finally get something, it didn't all happen overnight with you either. I'm assuming it was like, it started coming. You're like, okay, this is good. Like, we could buy a house. We could afford the bills. And you sort of worked yourself up. And at this point, you know, I watch you talk about business. You have sort of an astute business mind. And I think it comes from the fact that you were not handed much in your life and you worked very hard from it. So I take from that as well. You know, I'm sort of going through that right now where I'm sort of fixing little things like going to a financial advisor, making sure that my credit's in order. I want to buy a house in the next couple of years. It's like, but I grew up so poor and you know, even just, you know, being a struggling young comedian that it's not, I mean, look, I guess if I had $25 million dumped in my lap, I'd probably buy a fucking nice car and so I'd have some things, but I wouldn't be stupid with the money. Cause you remember a time very recently when that money's not there and you're like, fuck.
Well, I remember, and you can read all about this in Quitters Never Win, which is available on pre-order in the United States, by the way. It gets released 20th of January, which I don't know why they didn't release it before Christmas in the States. But anyway, that's a conversation between me and the publishers. In the book, there is one section because you're right. You know, I didn't come from much and, you know, my family did the best they could. You know, there was six of us. There was a family of eight, six kids. So, you know, times were hard. My dad was a hardworking man. He was in the army and then he came out the army. He had a lot of injuries and, you know, times were tough. Anyway, so yeah, you're right. When I started making money, you know, I always felt like it might stop, you know, and that always kept me working hard because I didn't want to go back to those times where, you know, working for minimum wage, doing fucking 60 hours a week and still being broke at the end of it. You know what I mean? And that scared me. Doing all those shitty jobs scared me and kept me honest and kept me working hard. And I'd been in the UFC for a number of years now. And as I say, it's in the book. I remember I was driving back from training one day and I bought myself a decent car. It was an Audi S5, and I'm driving in. And, you know, it was a beautiful card. They'd just come out then. And I was driving past the King's Arms, which was a pub I used to hang out at. And I'm ashamed to say, a pub that I did get arrested at a couple of times. And we'd always hang out at the front on a sunny day, having a few beers, sitting on the benches and whatnot. And I drove past that pub. And I was driving the car in my nice new car with money in the bank. And I was training for a big fight in Las Vegas coming up. And there was no one else in the car. And I just went, yes, just to myself. And then carried on driving. Because I was I've left that life behind. I've left that life behind. That was your
moment where you felt like you turned a corner. Like you were like, that's amazing.
I finally allowed myself to say, you know, I've done it. I've made it. And I'm not going back there. You know what I'm saying? But listen, going back to the fight, Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua, you know, I mean, listen, Ruiz, God bless him, you know, he's enjoying the spoils. And as we know, in heavyweight boxing at that level, you know, I don't think there's many sports in the world or many events in the world that will earn you that kind of money. I don't know what his purse was, maybe $10 million, maybe $20 million, who knows? But Anthony Joshua needs to win this fight. He was on top of boxing for the longest time. Two losses in a row, certainly two knockouts in a row we've seen in boxing. Sometimes that might be, you know, he might be done. Maybe he'll stick around and say, no, I want to show everybody that I want to, you know, I want to get the title back and prove I wasn't a flash in the pan. He was never a flash in the pan. He was a great fighter and a great champion. Still is, pardon me. But if you get knocked out twice, we have seen it in boxing. I mean, look at Nazim Hamed. Prince Nazim Hamed back in the day was destroying everybody. Then he got knocked out against Barrera and we never saw him again. He took all his money and just fucked off. You know, and you do see that a lot in boxing. It is curious. Maybe it's because the money is so much higher. But I'll be enjoying that one. I'm looking forward to the fight. And if anyone's in the area, come over to my house. Saturday morning, open door policy. Get yourself in and sit and watch the fight with me. There you go. You know where I live.
You know where he lives. This is actually kind of interesting. Apparently, Ruiz, to get the fight, he DM'd the promoter and asked him for it. And I think that's awesome. And I'll tell you why. Because you can't sit around and wait for shit to come to you in life. I saw you like this tweet of mine recently. There was a guy who, I guess he needed a kidney or something, right? And he was at a football game and he held up a sign and said, I need a kidney. You know, call this number. And somebody else had posted a comment underneath the picture, because somebody had shared it and they were like, let's make this thing go viral. And the person was like, oh, well, why does this person get to skip the line? There's plenty of people who need kidneys that are out there and they go based off of when you need it, you know, based off of the urgency. And I said, yes, I do understand that, you know, but if my kid needs a kidney, if I need a kidney, you know, I got to be honest with you. You only got you're your biggest fucking fan. You're your biggest supporter. You got to ask for shit. You got to make shit happen in life. And if you want to be the person that just waits in line and waits for things to hand for you and play by the rules, and you got to go on this, you might just die one day. You might die needing a kidney. And I wouldn't want to take that chance if I had kids or a family or anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's an extreme example. I mean, I think the point you're getting at is if you don't ask, you don't get, you know, whereas like children, they ask, you say, hey, don't be rude. Don't ask for that. But if you don't ask, you don't get. Or a kidney is a bit of an extreme example, but I do sign off on that. You have got to put yourself forward. And just quickly before we move on, staying on the boxing topic or the Saudi Arabia, I have a couple of friends in high places and the commissioner for sport for Saudi Arabia contacted a friend of mine because he met him when he was with me. And they said, listen, we're trying to turn Saudi Arabia into a tourist destination and a sporting venue. Okay, that's why the UFC was there recently. That's why these fights are happening. They're investing a lot of money in the area, if I'm not mistaken. They're trying to reinvent it, so to speak, and get, you know, turn it into like another Dubai and things like that. And he's like, yeah, we want you to make an introduction to the UFC for us, you know, and maybe we'll bring you in on the deal and this type of thing. And I'm like, stay in your lane. Right, that's the expression. If I called Dana and said, Dana, we're going to promote a fight in Saudi Arabia, but he'd be like, Mike, shut the fuck up, stay in your lane. Right, so, you know, and to a certain degree, you have got to know when to stay in your lane, you know what I mean? But when that fight happened and when this fight's happening in Saudi Arabia, my buddy's on the phone to me every day going, see, fucking idiot, you pussy. If you had a fucking pair of balls, we could have been promoting that fight this week. I'm like, what are you talking about? What madness is this? But if you don't ask, you don't get.
I want to see. I want to see the first female UFC fight in a hijab or hajib. What is it called? Hijab. that would be fun. Sure. Good for you. Good for them. I know that I have no desire in visiting that part of the world, and it's not disrespecting that part of the world. It's just everything I've seen in media and anything.
You don't want to visit anywhere. You've said this many times. You like the American, you like United States. You don't want to go somewhere where you don't know the culture. You've said this many times.
I'm going to Jamaica for the fifth time in February. So thank you very much. You know nothing about my culture and the way that I think.
Oh, you're going somewhere where that isn't too far, where you can smoke copious amounts of marijuana. Okay, for five times. Do you know there's other places in the world? You're one of those douchebags that goes to the same hotel, the same place every single year.
That's not true.
And you dress it up as a Christmas present for your friends, you know, because you really just want a vacation in, where you go in Jamaica. Jamaica. What else? Oh, right. So we've slandered Nate Marquardt. That's good.
We've disparaged the culture of Saudi Arabia. We've burned a couple bridges for you and your friends today.
You have disparaged Saudi Arabia. I'm a big fan of the world.
Name your top three favorite things about Saudi Arabia. Go.
Oh, my God. I mean, listen, where do I start? It's crazy. So, like, the cuisine, I mean, oh, God. I mean, I just love a nice bit of hummus and a bit of fried camel. Oh, delightful, delightful. What else? Oh, I mean, if you want to get a suntan, I mean, Jesus Christ, the sun is shining constantly.
It's true.
And thirdly, you know, they got their women in check. they got their women in check. You know what I mean?
To be honest with you, they have no issues with single-use plastic water bottles. There's no water there. It's perfect, actually. No
exactly,
pork,
exactly.
No water bottles. It's a perfect place for Michael Bisping. You could beat your wife. It's an incredible culture.
I don't like to beat my wife up. All right, let's go through these topics. I keep trying to do this in a quick hittery style, but you keep wanting to just like...
have a conversation on our podcast? Yes, that's what I would like to do.
People want to hear us talk about the fights, though, Lewis. There is MMA going on and fights, and we talked about Ruiz and Joshua. Let's make a prediction. I'm hoping Anthony Joshua wins this fight, but I don't know if he will because Ruiz beat him pretty soundly in that first one. He did. He just outboxed him. He was the better fighter. And coming into this fight, he has the advantage. He certainly has the psychological advantage. No doubt Joshua can make some changes, some adjustments, you know, to the way he fought. But unfortunately... Yeah, I think Ruiz wins. He does. I feel compelled to say that Joshua wins because I'm British and I'm certainly wishing him the best. And I hope he does it. I hope he does it. But I've got a bad feeling Ruiz is going to do it. Justin Gaethje says he has offered to serve as the backup for Khabib versus Tony, but only if the UFC is willing to pay for his training camp. Hot topic.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they've done that in the past, right? There's been a couple times now where we've heard about it, and it's almost like a rumor. I don't know if there's ever even been anything really confirmed. Nobody's really talked about it, have they? Or maybe one time it was truly confirmed where the guy was named and he said, I'm being paid to train just in case this guy gets injured. You know, an understudy, you know, so to say. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it, but here's the thing. I think Gaethje should just fucking bank himself. Go train, go stay in shape. You know, it's like that is an investment that you make toward your future. Just be there because guess what? If you sort of set this parameter where they need to pay for it and then, you know, you're not ready to step up, we'll just go to the next guy. And I don't think that's worth it.
Yeah, but this fight's definitely going to happen. Let's be honest. You know, I mean, that's good for Justin Gaethje if he can pull that off because basically, in my opinion, he's just going to get paid to train because there's no way this fight can fall out for a fifth time. And of course, you know, I'm tempting fate there, but I just don't see it. I mean, look, what was the last one? The last one was Tony Ferguson walking through the Fox studios 2 or 3 days before the actual fight, trips on a cable and tears his ACL. Yeah, I mean, that was just wild. One time Khabib had to go to the hospital, I think, when he was cutting weight. There's been all these crazy circumstances. I just fail to see how that can happen.
We have a lot of time.
So,
this is, when is this, April?
April 18th, yeah.
That's a lot.
So a lot can happen.
That's a lot of production cables to avoid between now and April 18th.
What are we now? So we're November something, December, January, February, March, April. 5 months. 5 months away. You're right. A lot can go wrong in 5 months.
And am I wrong or am I right? Tony's been injured in other times in the past, right? How many times has he been injured? I know he took off a handful of times. And guys that are susceptible to injuries, that's what it is. If I'm Gaethje, anything could happen. We've watched so many fights fall apart. It's not that crazy. I wouldn't be completely surprised or shocked if something like that happened. We've watched fights fall apart a day before the fight. And, you know, anything could happen. If I'm Justin Gaethje and his team, Okay, he's the dude right now sitting on the sidelines. I would keep myself ready for Connor versus fucking Cowboy, and I would keep myself ready for this fight. I would just keep myself in shape, not take another fight. All you're doing is training. All you're doing is spending a few months growing. It's, in my opinion, an investment toward possibly the biggest fight of your life. And if he's the dude that's there, and everyone loves Gaethje right now, people are really high on Gaethje. If there was an injury, he would probably be the go-to guy in either scenario.
Yeah, absolutely he would. I mean, he's the ideal backup for any of those. If one of them, if one party out of those two big fights, Conor, Cowboy, Khabib, Ferguson, any one of them drops out, Gaethje's the next guy. So yeah, he's doing the right thing. Whether or not the UFC pay him, that's his job as a fighter. You want to stay in shape, you want to work on your skill set, you want to try and improve all the time. You know, it's funny, I hear about these fighters, these young, low-level fighters. It used to drive me crazy, and I know it drives Perillo crazy. Sometimes we're in the gym, and some guy that's had like one fight is like, he's talking about what he's going to focus on in this training camp. You don't have training camps at that stage of your career. You know what I mean? You just train. You train because that's your job. When I used to train in the early days, I'd have a fight on a Saturday night. Monday morning, I was back in the gym because I was in that building phase. I was still trying to learn, trying to get better, trying to round out my skill set and truly become world class. So Gage is doing the right thing. Just keep doing that. Keep training like he's supposed to. And if one of them drops out, he'll be there to jump in. But, you know, talking of Khabib for a second, this is kind of funny. Khabib says that he will actually be focused in training for this fight where he wasn't really for his last four. And here's the quote from him. Khabib says, of course, I will train more. Okay, hold on. Yes, you know, of course, I will train more for this fight because I got a worthy opponent. And I can't do a Khabib.
You can do a Russian. Okay. Come on. Russian's easy. That's one of the easiest ones.
Of course, I will train for this fight, but it's not Ivan Drago. I'll do it like this. I will train for this fight because I got a worthy opponent. He's very good, very dangerous opponent. And to be honest, I like this motivation for my last fights. Iaquinta, Connor, Barboza, Poirier, they're not the same as Tony Ferguson. That's why I feel that fire burning inside me again.
Holy shit. Not since that baby bear has Khabib felt this type of passion. Yeah, I'm excited for this fight. This fight, what's funny is they just did a poll, and I guess, Harrington, you have that figure, right? Overwhelmingly, people are saying that they're more excited for Khabib versus Tony than Connor versus Cowboy. I think
really
anybody visiting an MMA website is more than a casual fan, though. So it's, yeah, the hardcores are going to be more into this fight. I think if you pulled the average person walking down the street in Times Square or, you know, in Hollywood on the Walk of Fame, I think they'd probably tell you they're a little bit more excited for Connor to come back. But that's casual versus hardcore.
Yeah, absolutely. You just broke it down perfectly there. Which main event are you looking forward to more? Wow, 69%. But as you just said, they're hardcore MMA fans. If they're, you know, responding to Ariel Helwani, they're going on MMA sites, things like that. You know, I have family members and friends that watch fights, but they're very casual. They're not like I am, going to MMA Junkie when they get out of bed and just seeing what's going on in the MMA world. So yeah, you're absolutely right. But that's funny that Khabib said that. I mean, he's throwing a little shade at Conor, Barboza, Poirier, Iaquinta. I'm not sure, you know, listen, I like Khabib, but I'm not sure if I believe that. I mean, that's a nice bit of trash talk. It's a good headline. But come on, there's no way that he didn't train his balls off for Conor. After all the shit that Conor talked at that first press conference, there's no way that he didn't train his balls off for that. So that's good for him. Valentina Shevchenko, talking of Hollywood, talking of, you know, single-use plastics, I think she'll be joining us because Valentina Shevchenko has just wrapped up filming on a new movie called Bruised, which stars Halle Berry. You know, I could do a very good Valentina Shevchenko because this for me is a very important fight. And I just finished movie with Halle Berry called Bruised, former X-Men star playing a female MMA fighter. And I will, Valentina Shevchenko, be her main rival. She's booked to defend her title against Caitlin Chukagian. Whatever. Yeah, Shevchenko getting into the movies. I knew that would happen. Have you looked at Valentina Shevchenko? She's a fucking badass. She's a total badass. The way she fights, when she's not doing that, she's fucking out there shooting guns, target practice. She is a legitimate badass, and she looks pretty good as well. She's got a good physique. You know, she's got, you know, striking blonde hair. You know, she's got a fucking gun tattooed on the side of her. So it was only a matter of time, I think, in my opinion, before she made the crossover into some kind of action movie. So good for her. Fair play.
Halle Berry playing a female MMA fighter in the movie Bruised. Interesting. I mean, It's definitely, there's been a bunch of MMA movies at this point. Have any of them been really good? I enjoyed Here Comes the Boom. It was funny until the cringy fucking thing where the band from the high school was playing him out when he was walking out. That was really cheesy. But I thought it was pretty funny. It was a decent movie. What were some other ones that were?
Well, the main one is Warrior. You know, and I think that came closest to not being cheesy, because the problem is with a lot of MMA movies, I don't know why this is, but they just seem so cringe. And because the directors or the people involved, they're trying to portray what the image of MMA that they perceive. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And in my opinion, even Warrior, which was a good movie, I haven't seen all of it. I've seen most of it. I actually fell asleep. But it was okay. It was all right. But still, I don't feel that any MMA movie so far has captured the real essence of the fighter's journey and the training and the lead up to the fight and the emotions that they go through. I in my opinion, they all suck so far, to be honest. Warrior's the best of a bad bunch. It's not a bad movie, but I still don't feel it captured the essence of mixed martial arts. That's why I'm writing an MMA movie. Lewis, I'm writing the movie. I'm writing the script. I'm working on it, and I'm going to rectify the wrongs that all these talented producers, directors, film creators, showrunners, they all got it wrong. And I have no experience in this whatsoever.
I was going to say, are you really? Or are you just joking? Because it's a big undertaking to write a movie. I would say maybe we write a sketch, 2-3 minute sketch. Let's get that out of the way. Figure out get all those things worked out.
Working on the treatment. I'm working on the treatment and then going to iron out the details later. But, you know, step by step, baby boy, step by step. Trust me, it's coming.
I liked Warrior. I thought it was you're right, it was the closest representation to real MMA. I think they actually had some really good, choreographers that were true MMA fighters. I want to say it was Randy Couture involved, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But, yeah, and I thought the drama was great. Nick Nolte's character was great. Like, a legitimately great performance. Like, it was cool. Yeah. You know, a little cheesy brother versus brother. It's fine. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see if Halle Berry, very interesting. She's 50 years old. Halle Berry was my first celebrity crush as a kid. Literally my first, the first ever as Mrs. Stone in the Flintstones movie. Pull up a picture of Halle Berry as a kid. I remember watching this movie with my mom, my sister, and having a little boner in the movie theater, just being fucking way turned on by her crawling across the desk and being like, I gotta go. This is too much.
Was that the first time you remember actually physically being attracted to a woman? Because I remember mine as well.
It was my first celebrity where I was like, wow, I like her. She's the one.
Yeah. Same here. I remember I was watching in England, they used to have, it was called The Chart Show on a Saturday morning where they just played music videos, you know. Mm. And I remember watching, yeah, she looks good there. She does. She looks Halle Berry looks real good there. She's not my type. I mean, she does look attractive there. I never really realized what all the fuss was about. Hey, listen, I just never, you know, Halle Berry was never my type, okay? But I remember when I was a kid, I was watching The Chart Show on a Saturday morning and Kylie Minogue came on. And that same thing, I was like, what the fuck is happening down there? I was like, holy shit, I like watching this video. That's all I know. I don't know what's going on down there, but Jesus Christ, this video is great.
Yeah, dude. We also grew up at a time, because we're roughly the same age, where it was before porn, before you could just click at a button. These kids, you guys have no idea how easy you have it. I would just flip through the channels and I'd find a beautiful woman just on regular TV, and that would be my porn for the day. It would be a chick reading the news.
I've got a better one. I'd go through the catalogs and look at the lingerie section.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, you have catalogs out here?
Yeah, like Victoria's Secret. There she is.
No, like a big fucking thick catalog where they had everything in it. Like at Christmas, I'd look Macy's. At the toys.
Yeah.
And they're like this big, like Littlewood's catalogs.
Never mind, we don't have them. I'm sorry. I tried to connect with you, but I know what you're talking about. We would look through the Macy's catalog and they'd have the bra section for women to you know.
Yeah. I'd look at that sometimes, behind the couch in the front room. Because I always looked at the toy section and then I'd circle out which toys I want for my mom and my dad and never got any of them. But I'd have a little sneaky peek at the fucking the bra section as well. Why not? But I remember, you're right, it is easy for kids these days if they want to look at porn. Jesus Christ, it's just literally the click of a button. Porn mags, they were a thing back in the day. And this guy that I used to hang around with, I used to go in his house. I didn't hang around with him for long because he was a bit weird.
This is where we're going to find out where all of your anger and pain comes from. Is this story about you getting molested that you're about to tell?
No. Not on this occasion. Wasn't molested this time. No. I go in his house and his mum would bring me in. Say, oh, yeah, he's upstairs. Come on. He'd walk me up. She'd walk me up and open the door. And you go in his room and literally all over the walls were just pictures of like the center spread of a porno mag with women with their vaginas just wide open. And I was like, I feel really uneasy, which is weird. And his mum never said anything. And she probably just thought it was a healthy pursuit for a young boy to have. But come on, that's a little strange.
I'm with you because my mom actually bought me my first dirty magazine, Gallery Magazine. I was maybe 11. Yeah. Because my mom, I swear to God, I didn't have a dad. So I think she was like, well, you know, he's at an age now where he's going to get a nudie magazine. So yeah, I picked it out. She bought it. My mom's fucked up. She was a bad mom in a lot of ways. I think her intention was to be like a good forward thinking mother who's trying to like be both a dad and a mom. But
it sounds like it.
For me, she was just starting me on my way to a crippling porn addiction. I mean, Jesus Christ. The shit that I watch now, I jerked off the other day to just a girl with her boobs out. That's how far I've gone with like porn. So I've gone through everything you could possibly go down, and now just boobs. I've turned around. I've crossed the line where I'm now back at the beginning. I'm innocent.
Yeah, I was gonna say. You said I jerk off to the most crazy, disgusting stuff, and you said, oh yeah, but then there she was, a woman with her boobs out. I'm like, that's pretty tame. That's not wild.
I'm saying that I've gone so far that I've reset the clock. There's nothing else to do. So now it's gone back to just boobs, which is anybody who knows what I'm talking about, that you get it. Nobody could jerk off to just boobs now, not with everything on the internet. You have to be a special type of sicko to be able to just jerk off to boobs. That's crazy.
I don't know. It depends what kind of boobs they are. It depends how good they look and how attractive the face is that is holding the boobs. I like a good face as well. I like a good figure. I remember the first time, well, not the first time, my mom found some porno mags in our house, and my mom was very, very quite the opposite to your mother. Let me tell you, strict, strong Catholic, you know, you couldn't swear and all this type of stuff. She didn't mind beating the shit out of us regularly, though. I'm sure the Catholic Church teaches that, I'm sure. But yeah, when she found some porno mags, downstairs where we hung all the coats, it was like a little cupboard, and they were under like some shoes and under a coat. And she was going ballistic. And I got the blame. I got the fucking blame. I to this day, I don't know where they came from. They're either my dad's or comrades. One or the other. And I took the blame for it.
And they let you just get your ass kicked?
Yeah, the fucking assholes. Nobody stepped up and said, listen. It wasn't Michael, okay? It was me. I'm the disgusting bastard, okay?
I hope it was your dad so much.
I guarantee it was my dad. He's like, fuck this. You're on your own on this one, son. I'm sorry. I'm tapping out. No. That's all you, buddy. He's like, yeah, I don't know, Kev. I don't fucking know. I've never seen him before in my life. This dirty little bastard. Look at him.
The boy's got a problem. He's got a problem. He's addicted.
Yeah, exactly. And she beat me up pretty good with a rolling pin, no less. But
I don't want to get into the religious conversation again, but it is interesting, like raising your kids with this crazy morality of like Catholicism and guilt, where it's like I remember being like 6 or 7 years old and having a thought, like thinking like, is God real? But then stopping myself and going like, wait a minute, I can't think God's not real, because if I think that, I'm going to burn in hell. And being 6 years old and being tormented with this fucked up thought in the most formative years of your life, where you're like figuring out the world, like it's borderline abuse. It's borderline abusive, in my opinion, to do that to a kid and to put that sort of guilt on them. But then at the same time, because they see, you know, a pair of boobs, you'll beat the shit out of them based off some sort of weird, crazy moral code. The world is crazy. It really is.
Yeah, so we used to have this priest at our school, obviously Catholic school, Father Morris. Did I tell this story recently? I don't think I did. I was telling it to somebody. I don't think it was on here.
I don't know that. I didn't know you went to a Catholic school, so no.
Yeah. So I went to a Catholic school and our priest was Father Morris. And I don't know if it was once a week or once every 2 weeks, we had to go in and do confession. And he'd always ask, when was the last time you went to church? I'm like, oh God, 2-3 weeks ago. And he would tell us, and he, not only me, he would tell all the children, if you didn't go to church every week, we will burn in hell. And Mrs. Garlick, she was our religious studies teacher. She found out about this and fucking went at the priest. And it was the best thing ever. Mrs. Garlick and Father Morris at the front of the classroom having a blazing row. She's like, don't you dare tell these children that they will burn in hell if they miss a week of mass and all this type of stuff. And the priest was going back at her and we were all just sitting there. It was like the best thing we'd ever fucking see. But go Mrs. Garlick, because that priest was a fucking asshole.
Yeah, it's like, you know, having religion, you know, as a moral compass for children, I think is good. You should be the moral compass for children. You should be. Me and, you know, as a parent, we should be guiding our children, and we don't necessarily need some sort of, like, you know, made up rules to do it. You know what morality is. You know what, you know, the sense of hopefully you're raising your kids to be good kids. But I think the guilt side of it and the, you know, that side of it where, you know, I just think that you're doing something to a kid. They shouldn't be feeling this sense of anxiety. At 6 years old, I shouldn't be thinking about burning in hell and what that means. Correct. And like, that's a fucked up warped thought for a little kid to have. And I think that it probably has negative psychological effects.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we won't spend too much time. In fact, we'll move on this. But I want to finish by saying, listen, in America, a lot of people are God-fearing people, and that's great, and I respect that. And as you say, for a moral compass, it's a good guide. You know, in England, it's very different. In England, I said this recently. I was in, when I was at the Fox Studios, when I worked there sometime last year, probably. I was talking to them. I said, listen, most people, like most of my neighbors here, you know, on a Sunday, they all get up and they go to church. Very, very respectable. Very respectful. Most of the time I'm led on the couch. While they're at church, I'm hungover on the couch. You know, they're definitely better people than me. I get it. Okay. But I was telling these people at Fox Studios, I don't know a single person in England that goes to church. Nobody goes to church. I do not know a single one of my friends, one of my family, even my mother. My mother goes once a year now. On Christmas Eve, she goes to church. That's it. Or a christening or a wedding. They're the only times that people go to church in England. Now, I'm sure there is some people that go frequently for religious reasons, but not in the circle of people that I know, you know. But you know, if you are one of them, then good for you. And you know, I wish you all the best. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I would love to believe in God. I would love to believe that when I die, I go to a better place. I go to heaven and I'm forgiven for all my sins and things like that. I would. And I get to see all my loved ones that have passed away and died. That's a great thing. That's a great feeling. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. You know, but we'll leave it at that.
I kind of want this interesting, not even about religion. It's about sort of spirituality in general. So that's it. When you believe you die, you die. In the ground.
Yes, 100%.
That's it, nothing.
Listen, you know what we are? We're this. I'm same as this microphone. I'm a collection of molecules that are put together in a certain fucking way. And when I die, I will go back into the ground. I will turn into dust, ashes, whatever. That's it. You know, simple as that. Done. When we're dead, I would look, what? Very depressing? No. It's a very realistic fucking take. Do you believe that when your dog dies, he's going to be in doggy heaven? You know, I hope Dito's up there. I hope he's up there, but I don't think he is. You know, spider that maybe you stepped on? You know,
we
that's dead
about
as well.
This. Dito, if there is heaven and hell, Dito is burning in the fiery pits of hell right now for what he did to your other dog.
Don't you fucking say that. Don't you fucking say that.
Doggy, Dito is a goddamn killer. Okay. Dito's if Dito was a human being, he'd be like a hardened criminal who would be behind bars. There's no fucking way. Dito just attacked a poor little defenseless pup. Tore his eyeball out of his face.
That's what German Shepherds do. Okay, that is what they're designed to do. They are guard dogs. They are police dogs. They are attack dogs, okay? He's merely as God intended him to
be. What was the other dog's name?
The one that died? Charlie?
Charlie had the eye torn out, right? Who had the eye torn out?
No. Harry had the eye torn out. Harry's still skipping about with one eye, just like me. Gets along. Doing just fine. Charlie, unfortunately, the pug, he wasn't so lucky. He passed away.
How did Charlie die?
Fucking Dito.
He killed him.
Him, basically. Yeah, he killed him.
It's a fucking psycho. He's in hell. Dito's fucking...
For those people that haven't heard the story, so we got a little pug called Charlie, the cutest little thing for Ellie's birthday, okay?
It was a birthday present.
It was a birthday present. Don't laugh, motherfucker. And we get the pug, and we had some friends over, Chris Overton and his wife. They came over and they stayed with us, and they were like, oh my God, Charlie's the cutest little thing ever. And Charlie slept in their bed all night, and I got up in the morning. We had a rare Sunday morning show for the UFC. I said, see you guys, I'm going up to the Fox Studios. As I'm just walking into the Fox Studios, I call Rebecca to just say, listen, just walking in, have a good day, I'll see you tonight. She's like, oh, and I'm like, what's going on? She goes, it's Charlie, Dito got him. I'm like, what's going on? She goes, I don't know, but he's not moving his head and his eyeballs kind of hanging out and this and that. And I'm like, oh my God, take him to the vet. She says, I'm on my way. Long story short, I get on the phone to the vet. The vet says, listen, you know, the Charlie's going to be put down. Simple as that. I said, okay. I said, just let me speak to my daughter first. So I get on the phone to my daughter. I said, listen, Ellie, unfortunately, you know, Charlie's not going to make it. They're going to give him an injection. I said, and he's going to feel good. I said, because that's what these things do. And then he'll fall asleep and he'll pass away. Is that okay? And she's like, yes, Dad. Yes. Trying to be brave and not cry. And that was the worst part of it. Now here's the kicker. So I go through that. Quite traumatizing. I've just had a dog murdered. I've had to tell my daughter that we're putting it down. Her fucking birthday present, right? I walk into the Fox studios and there's Brian Stan amongst all the Fox people, all the producers, everything, the writers, whatnot. I'm like, hey, guys, how are we doing? Oh, Michael, you're here. 5 minutes late as usual. I'm like, oh, God, guys, you're not going to believe what's happened. I said, fucking Charlie has been killed by my other dog. And they're like, no. Brian Stan chirps up. He goes, hey, I have brothers dying every single fucking day in Iraq and Afghanistan. Are you going to stand there and talk to me about a fucking dog? I'm like, Brian, you're right. When you put it like that, I get it. But in my household, a dog just getting murdered is kind of a big fucking deal. So relax, buddy, okay? Fuck me.
That's what his reaction is to any problem that anybody has. Like, oh, you know what? I asked for my eggs to be over easy and not scrambled. Hey, motherfucker, I have brothers dying in Saudi Arabia right now.
I had an arm blown off in combat, okay? Never mind your over easy eggs. All right, let's get through some of these topics. What are we talking about? I mean, can we talk about the fire? How long we've been going for? Should we talk?
We're
about
good.
The
we've been
week?
In about an hour and 10. We got a little bit of time left. A couple of questions. So why don't we get into the fight this week and get some picks for the main event at least? Which actually, I'm excited about this. This should be a solid fight. This is a short notice fight, obviously. I don't want to say his name wrong, Harrington.
Jarzino Rosenstruck.
Rosenstruck. Okay, Struck.
Rosenstruck or Rosenstrike?
Rosenstruck. I think Struck.
Strike. Jarzino Rosenstruck. Rosenstrike.
Jarzino Rosenstruck.
One of them. One of them, anyway. One of them.
So he's 9-0, undefeated as a heavyweight, coming against Alistair Overeem, who's a legend. I mean, look, at the end of the day, heavyweight UFC fight, you can't go wrong. I'm really excited. This could be in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing. This guy, this Jarzino. We're just calling Jarzino, right? By the way, I had a little back and forth with him on Instagram last night. I know what I'm doing. I'm working up to getting him in as a guest. Send him a little follow. Send him a little, hey, good luck this weekend. Thanks, Mike, in return. Next tweet is, hey, great win. Fancy jumping on the BYM. So far, he's 9-0 in MMA. 8 of those by knockout, okay? And I commentated for one of his fights, and I got in there. That was in Fortaleza, Brazil, when he knocked out Junior Albini. And then he knocked out Alan Crowder. Then he knocked out Andre Arlovsky. Majority of these are in the first round. But kickboxing, I mean, this guy had a ton of kickboxing fights, a lot. 76 wins, Jesus. 64 TKOs. Okay, 76 wins, 8 losses, 64 TKOs. This man is a very, very accomplished kickboxer. He's making the transition to MMA, undefeated so far. And he's, Jesus, we might have another, you know, potential world champion on our hands. If he can go in there and beat somebody like Alistair Overeem, Alistair definitely has the experience, probably has the, well, will have the grappling advantage for sure. But most of the time, you know, Overeem tends to fight on his feet. You don't really see him for double legs and things like that, but you never know. Maybe he'll go to do that against Rosenstruck, whatever the fuck his name is, Jarzino, because that would be the smart way to the victory. Because for sure, I would say Overeem has a grappling advantage. But if this guy beats Overeem, he already said it on Helwani's show on Monday. I saw him talking, saying he's calling out Francis Ngannou. And I got to say, I respect the balls of this man because there isn't too many people out there calling out Francis Ngannou.
Well, look, he's got the skill set to do it. I mean, if he's that accomplished in kickboxing, you know, if you're going to come into this fight game and you believe in yourself, you're 9-0, you want to be a world champion, yeah, you're supposed to call out the biggest, baddest, best names possible. So, I do respect it. I'm not overly blown away. I think, like, yeah, that's, in my opinion, that's the bare minimum that a fighter should be doing, which is calling out the guys that are the biggest, baddest, even if you don't believe it. I just want to hear that out of a fighter. I want to hear him talk about how he wants to fight fucking Overeem and Ngannou at the same time in the cage, and he'll beat any man. That's what you want to hear. You don't want to hear a moment of honesty where he goes, oh, you know what? I'm going to work myself up to Ngannou. No,
absolutely right. And I do respect that. But it is refreshing in this day and age because a lot of people wouldn't do that. In fact, you know, just playing devil's advocate, putting the other side, the flip side to what you just said, because I certainly respect that. Of course I do. That's why I was like, fuck. That's why I reached out to the guy straight away, because when he said that, I thought, wow, man, I'm a big fan of this guy. And the fact that he's going to go in there against Overeem, this will be his 10th fight, I think. You know, so he's going in there against Overeem. And then after that, he's talking about calling out Ngannou. I thought, wow, this guy's great. Now, if he had a manager that was a little more protective, they might say, well, hold on a minute. How about you beat Overeem? And then you get another fight. Then you get a title fight. And maybe you fight Ngannou when you're the champion. And you get paid big time for it. You know, that would be, you know, the argument to that. But still, you know, it's very, very refreshing. But it's a tough fight against Overeem. Listen, if he stays on the feet, I reckon this guy probably knocks out Overeem. Because yeah. Overeem's been around a long time. He's been stopped a few times. You know, but that said, he does surprise me. He's had some good wins recently. But Overeem can grapple. He's a solid grappler with a lot of submissions. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I apologize. But I was going to say the problem
is you're good.
In Overeem's recent losses, all of them come by way of knockout. So, you know, Overeem's a monster, and he's just that dude. I mean, honestly, I don't want to call him a gatekeeper because I think that's actually disrespectful to where Overeem's at. Overeem is always a fight or two away from getting a title shot. He's just been around for so long. But he got knocked out off Stipe, knocked out off Curtis Blaydes, knocked out off Francis Ngannou, knocked out off Ben Rothwell, Travis Brown, Antonio Bigfoot Silva. I mean, he's got a lot of knockouts from guys that aren't as accomplished of kickboxers.
But to be fair, Lewis, you painted Overeem in a bad light there. All you did was list off all the times he's been knocked out or beaten. He's on a 2-fight win streak. He knocked out Alexei Oleinik. He knocked out Sergey Pavlovich. Prior to that, got knocked out against Curtis Blaydes and knocked out against Ngannou. Okay, that happens. Before that, he beat Fabrizio Werdum and he beat Mark Hunt. So it's not like he's like just racking up all these consecutive losses. You know, he's on a 2-fight win streak. Prior to that, he lost 2. Prior to that, he won 2. Before that, he lost to Stipe Miocic. Right. And then prior to that, he was on a 4-fight win streak. So yes, he has lost some fights, you know, but he's been at this for a long, long time. Overeem was fighting in Pride in the early days when people thought Pride was better than the UFC. When Fedor and Nogueira, all those, you know, these legendary fighters from the, you know, the real boom time of mixed martial arts. Overeem was out there then, you know, fighting the best people in the world. So he's been around for a long time. So he's got the experience. He's got the grappling advantage. But can he get the fight to the floor? And will he try and take it? I don't know if he will, you know, because he is a kickboxer by trade. You know, he's a striker at heart. You know, maybe he wants to prove a point. Because even though Rosenstruik is from Suriname, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I think he trains in Holland. So, you know, he probably wants, you know, Overeem being Dutch. It's like, you motherfucker, you coming in here with the Dutch kickboxing style that I, you know, brought to the forefront in mixed martial arts. So maybe he wants to keep it on the feet. Prediction?
I think it's Rosenstruik.
Oh. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Sorry, no, you're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's Rosenstruik. I think he gets it done. I know he does give up a little bit of size to Overeem as well, which means something. But yeah, I think that. Yeah, this guy's a knockout artist, and I think Overeem has been questions about his chin, or I've at least raised some questions about his chin. So we'll see what happens. I'm very excited about this fight happening this weekend. Let's get a couple questions going real quick, because we do got to wrap up here in just a few minutes. But thank you guys so much for listening. Real quick, you guys should know, go subscribe on our iTunes channel. If you guys just go to believeyoumepod.com, you guys can subscribe to our iTunes channel. You can subscribe on Google Play, Stitcher. There's a bunch of links there. You can just watch the latest episodes as well. You can also do that right at gasdigitalnetwork.com, even if you're not a subscriber. But subscribe on iTunes if you have Apple. Go to our YouTube channel. Subscribe there as well. Just search Michael Bisping Podcast or Believe You Me Podcast on YouTube. And if you love the show, you guys can obviously get the latest 30 episodes on the YouTube channel and on iTunes, but you can get every episode we've ever done at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM and get a 14-day free trial, pre-release, uncensored, ad-free, and all that good stuff.
Just before we get into the questions, I mean, there's some other great fights on the card as well. This is a good fight card because, you know, for the longest time, it was back to back to back every weekend. You know, there's been a few weeks where there wasn't any fights. You got the main event that we just talked about. Ben Rothwell taking on Stefan Struve. That's coming back. There's two big heavyweights. Aspen Ladd, Yana Kunitskaya. Ricky Simon, Rob Font, Thiago Alves taking on Tim Means. So it's a decent fight card. So I'll definitely be tuning into that one. I'm looking forward to it. But question time?
Yeah. Shoot us, if you guys want to join the conversation, the email address is bympod@gmail.com. Shoot us video questions, audio, pictures, content, all that good stuff. Let's pick the top two questions here, Harrington and Brian. So you guys can choose. You've seen them before. Take it away.
All right. First up is Mogan.
How's it going, Chael? I have two questions here for you. I was just wondering, I've heard reports that McGregor's eating cake for this here fight. He's eating cake in his diet. And I was just wondering, like, how would that affect his performance? And my other question is, just how good is Donald Cerrone's grappling?
Oh, bless. We got one of the younger generation sending in a question. God bless him. I'm trying to figure out, is that an Irish accent I'm hearing there? I think it is. Yeah, Irish.
So yeah, the first question was he's eating cake?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. He's fine at 170. We spoke about this on the last show. McGregor's not a natural 170. And to be honest, Cerrone, most of his career was at 155. But maybe they're just both being a bit lazy and taking the fight at 170. Why not? Certainly easier. So he can afford to eat a little bit of cake. I mean, I remember McGregor, when he fought Nate Diaz at 170, the famous line was, well, you've seen me on salads. Now you're going to see me on steaks. Okay, and so maybe this guy misheard. Steak rhymes with cake. You know, maybe he just made a mistake. Wow, steak rhymes with cake. Maybe he made a mistake. For goodness sake, oh, me the new train. Oh, my God, I've got to stop. Fucking stop with the rapping. Maybe having a slice of cake here and there. God bless him. So what? It's, you know, it's whatever makes you happy, young man. You know, in training camp, it's very, very rigorous. You go into the gym, it's repeat, repeat, repeat. Get your ass kicked on a daily basis. Get pushed to the limit. Sparring people, grappling people, you know, the stress, the media, all that type of stuff. And if you can afford it, if you can afford it calorie-wise, why not? You know, and whatever makes you happy. A little bit of ice cream. I used to like some ice cream in training camp. I used to like a nice bowl of ice cream. If I could have a bowl of ice cream, it put a big fucking smile on my face. You know, and it's little things like that. It's little moral victories that just, you know, whatever helps you get through the camp in a positive state of mind. Now, of course, we don't need to turn up looking like a fat slob, but a little bit of cake here and there. Yeah, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, I think people know their bodies as well. You know, I think that I'm sure if cake would be a problem with Conor training, he wouldn't be eating it. So, yeah, I don't think he'll have any trouble making 170. And then the other question was just how good is Donald Cerrone's grappling? Yeah. So what do you think of that?
Solid. It's good. It's good. Cowboy can hit a good double leg when he needs to. You know, he's got good timing on it and he has good penetration and he'll drive through. You know, that's important to take the man to the mat. You got to really drive through and he'll do that. You see Cerrone a lot of time when he shoots a double leg, sometimes he'll run them right across the octagon before they hit the canvas. So he's got a good double leg. Can he shoot it on a southpaw though? Cerrone does have trouble with southpaws historically. He's lost quite a few fights to southpaws. So for myself, when I was shooting a double leg, obviously, I wasn't a wrestler. I was only, you know, a wrestler through MMA. So most people stand orthodox with their left foot forward. So I learned how to shoot a double leg with the left foot forward. If I were fighting a southpaw and all of a sudden the right foot's forward, it changes the mechanics of the takedown. You got to put the other leg forward. You got to change it all. And for me, it was like malfunction, fucking hard. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. When I was fighting Vitor Belfort, I was like, when I was fighting Vitor Belfort, he's a southpaw. I'm like, right, the entire game plan, take him down, push him up against the fence, take him down, you know, and then look to tire him out in rounds 3, 4, 5, then take advantage when we've slowed him down. And I fucking drilled takedown after takedown after takedown on southpaws, brought in wrestlers, spent money on wrestling coaches, but it just didn't feel natural. And I didn't shoot a single fucking takedown in the fight. So we'll see how Cerrone does with that. If he gets it to the floor, I don't know how many submissions he's got on his record, but he's got quite a few submissions. I think most recently when he armbarred Mike Perry, that was a solid submission. He's got a good guard, defensively off his back. He's got a good top game as well. So, but you know what? Here's the thing. Conor's got good jiu-jitsu as well. So Cerrone's good. I think Conor's probably just as good on the ground as well. You know, maybe.
You think so?
All right, maybe. Yeah, well, maybe Cowboy has a slight edge. Maybe Cowboy has a slight edge. But yeah. Listen, when Conor fought Nate Diaz, He hit a nice little sweep on him. That was impressive. No, he's got good jiu-jitsu. And in fact, when you watch the fight with Khabib and Conor, when Khabib was trying to take him down in that first round, he was successful. He was successful. But credit where credit's due, it took him a while to secure that first takedown. And Conor defended well for a bit. Ultimately, Khabib got him down and got on top of him. But listen, as I say, credit where credit's due. Khabib had to really, really fucking work for it. So I think for Cowboy to use the takedowns, it's going to be the element of surprise. Because in the Khabib fight, Conor knew Khabib's going to shoot because that's what he does in every single fight. For Cowboy, the trick's going to be to lull him into thinking this is a pure striking battle. And then when you hit him with a combination, the hands come up to defend that, and then bang, that's when you shoot your shot. The hands are high to defend the punches, the hips are open, and then that's when you shoot. So if Cowboy uses the element of surprise, he'll probably get him down to the floor.
Yeah, boom. And also, not for nothing, Cowboy is a hell of a kickboxer as well and going to have a size advantage in that fight. And not for nothing, been much more active than Conor recently. So who knows? I mean, not for nothing, the more we're talking about it, the more I'm going, Cowboy might win this fight.
Hey, there's a very good chance that Cowboy wins this fight because you just touched on something there that I'd not thought of. He's been way more active. I mean, I don't think anyone's as active as fucking Cerrone. So he has that over everybody. But Conor is inactive. Simple as that. He's just not an active fighter. Last time was against Khabib. Before that was Eddie Alvarez. He had that one boxing match in between. He's not been active. Now, there's pros and cons to that. You know, the more times you're in the octagon, the more comfortable you are, but also the more miles on the clock, you know, the more hits to the chin. And he got knocked. Cerrone got knocked out in his last two. Conor didn't get knocked out in his last two. You know what I'm saying? So it's a double-edged sword. What else we got?
One more question. Who do we got here?
This is Dave Lone.
How's it going, guys? Dave from Weymouth. Sunny Weymouth, England. Great work, guys. Keep it up. Got a question for both of you. Now, when you do your performing in your respected fields, what is your mantras or anything that you say to yourself before you go on or before you go in the octagon or before you go on stage, Lewis? What do you go through in your mind? Is there anything you go to get yourself in the zone? Let me know. Harrington, you're the man. Keep it real, team. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Just do me a favor. In the future, edit out any compliments toward Michael Harrington in any of the fan questions, please.
Yeah, I was going to say, because we said, what are the best questions? I guarantee we have hordes of questions, so many good ones. But he picked this one because he got a shout out at the end. I mean, Harrington, come on.
I'm easily bribable.
Very self-serving, Mike Harrington. So guys, this is it. If you want questions to get on the show from now on, it's the opposite. You have the best Mike Harrington trashings or roast jokes. That's a good way to get on the show. In fact, I'll tell you right now, start sending them in right now, bympod@gmail.com. If you trash Harrington in a creative way, 99% shot it's going to get on the show.
So you're going to show up early to look through the questions?
God damn it. Not going to pay Brian overtime. that was a decent question. I can go first. I know what my mantra is. Please. Every time, right before I get on stage, I close my eyes and I look up to the sky and I say, what would Michael Bisping do? And I just repeat that to myself over and over and over again. And then I go out there and I have the fucking best set of my life. And that's all I need. And that's what you should do.
You know, you think Michael Bisping, he'd just crush this. He'd do so good. He'd be so hilarious. He'd just have a perfect set. You know, it's good advice. Good advice. What do you do, though? Do you do anything like that? Do you have a mantra, so to speak? By the way, what was that caller's name again? What was his name?
Dave Lamb.
Dave. Thank you, Dave, from Weymouth. Weymouth down in the south of England there. I'm sure it's pretty cold and wet right now, like most of England. Do you do anything? Do you have any kind of pre-show ritual other than getting high as a motherfucker?
No, I mean, I'm not really... once again, like, I'm not like, spiritual, so I'm not going to fucking pray or whatever, but
also, it's very different.
Night. You go on, when you're fighting in your most active time, once every 4 months, you were making that walk, and it was a bigger deal and a bigger moment. You know, you talked about meeting up with a sports psychologist and mentally going on, you know, it's a different thing. I do two spots, three spots at a night sometimes, where it's like, I can't do that every time. I'm an asshole if I'm fucking taking a knee every time before I get on stage. I look like a fucking dickhead.
I was going to say, they're completely different things. I'm walking out into a fucking battlefield where I could potentially lose an eye, lose my life, you know what I mean, against another trained fucking killer in unarmed combat, practically naked in front of the world, okay? There's a little bit of mental preparation goes into that. Lose on the flip side is that I've been working on some material, he's been fucking kicking the ball around with Harrington, he's thought of a good joke, going to go out there, going to get stoned, walk out, I'll try, if it hits, it hits. If not, fuck it, I won't do it again. You know what I mean?
Dave compares the two like these are two things. Like you're fucking, right. You're putting your life on the line every time you do it. I'm literally going out there. I was like, yeah, good set, bad set. Doesn't really fucking matter. Let's go get drunk.
Fuck. That was a shitty crowd tonight, weren't it? Didn't go too well. That one joke that I dropped about the homosexuals. Drop that one next time. Yeah, it's not the same thing. I'll give you a proper answer, Dave. Yeah, most times, and you know, as we just said, they are very, very different arenas. I'd always go and find a nice little quiet place in the room and just sit down, close my eyes, and you just think of all the sacrifices I've made to get to this point. Think about the training camp. Think about the fact that I did the road work. I made the sacrifices. I stuck to my diet. I did the sparring. I did everything I could to prepare for this fight. I'm in good shape. Then I think about all the obstacles that I've passed. I think about all those fights that I won to get to this stage. And if I can win all them, then maybe I can win one more. And sit there, think about my family. I picture my wife. I picture my kids. I picture the life I want to give them. Get myself in the zone. And then I'm like, right, that's it. I'm ready. Let's go fucking do this. And you know, and then sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I didn't do that, actually. Sometimes I just like, well, fuck it. Come on, let's go. Warm up in a good mood. Let's go have some fun. You know what I mean? But in the early days, for sure, for sure. When you get more comfortable to it, you don't necessarily do that, you know. But in the early days, that's what I did.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's also you get used to the nerves. The nerves is real. What you're doing in that moment, whatever that pre-fight ritual is, all you're doing is you're calming yourself down, right? You're nervous, yeah. And it's just kind of me. And I used to get really, really nervous before I got on stage. Probably the first 8 or 9 years that I did stand up, I would like really just, and I'm not a shy guy. I've been performing since I was a teenager. I was in a band when I was, 16, 15 years old. So I've been getting on stage. I was in drama side. We do plays. Never been a shy kid or quote unquote have stage fright, except I did. Like I felt the anxiety. I remember when I did Last Comic Standing. I mean, I was trembling right before I went on. Like I was shaking. I was so fucking, I remember that feeling and it was awful. That feeling was just that's not why I got into stand up. It was a show like Last Comic Standing where it's not like, you know, The Ultimate Fighter, you're going on there and you win or lose. It's not like somebody's critiquing your fight technique after the fight and you're moving on whether or not you were using good form. You might get in your head. You're like, no, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. They close the door. It's a fight at that point. I'm assuming you sort of even forget that you're on a reality show and it's a fight once you're in that ring with that guy. On The Ultimate Fight or on Last Comic Standing, you're not even just going up to entertain a crowd. You're going up to entertain a crowd, but also to have your jokes picked apart, judged, and critiqued. Yep. You feel very naked and you feel very nervous and you feel like, I mean, it's all eyes on you. And when you're in a nightclub doing stand-up comedy, you know, you're a jazz musician for the most part. You're kind of like there to entertain people, whatever it is. But when you're doing it to be judged, it takes sort of all of the fun out of the performance, and it wasn't fun, and I hated it.
You know, like when I go for auditions, same thing, you know, when I first started doing them, I mean, I used to be terrible at auditions. I've got pretty good now. So I think it all depends on the role, depends on what accent I got to do, things like that. But I remember in the acting world, you know, I still have to, you know, not psych myself up, but like give myself that confidence. You know what I mean? I remember when I first went to meet a manager and an agent, I was so fucking nervous because it's a new world to me. When I first moved out here, I had to go out to LA. I got a meeting with a potential manager and an agent. I had to go meet them. And I'm like, fuck, okay. You know, be confident. You're the fucking man, mate. You got this. Walk in there and make them think, I want to sign this guy. I want to represent this man. You know, and you big yourself up a little bit. And then when you're going into an audition, you're like, fuck, you doing your lines, I'm driving there. I typically record my audition on my phone and then play it back in the car as I'm driving to LA. Normally it takes about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and I'm listening to the audition. I'm doing it as I'm driving along and I'm like, yeah, I've got this. I know the words. And then I turn the tape off and I do it completely without the tape. And I'm like, I don't fucking know these words. I do it at home with Rebecca. I get it perfect every time. And then you walk in to do the audition and you're in a room and it's just some little girl. There's not the director there. You know, there's maybe a lady, you know what I mean? She doesn't give a fuck. She's just doing a job. her job is literally just to record it and send them off to the director. She has no say in the matter whatsoever. So why do you get nervous in front of them? Do you know what I mean? It's bizarre. You walk in and you clam up straight away like, fuck. And I'm like, shit. Sorry, can we start again? Because I know the words. I know the words, but I'm just a little nervous because I'm being judged, right? Because same thing as what you just said there. That tape is going to be sent off to some people, and some bigwigs are going to sit around. They're going to look at it. They're going to go, don't like the way it looks. Or he doesn't deliver it very well. Or he's not. Oh God, he's not very believable. You know, that's where the nerves comes from, being judged a little bit. And of course, because you want it, you want to be successful. You know, you want to achieve whatever the goal is. You know, you want to achieve it. So you know, you put in the preparation, you do the hard work, and hopefully you do well. But yeah, there you go. I think then that'll be our show for the day.
Great show. What do you think, Mike? We got to give you have to give a 1 to 10 at the end of every show, because every time you say it wasn't good. Now, in my opinion,
I didn't like the last show we did. But go on. But in your opinion, today was
best show we've ever done. I'll say it right now.
You've been looking at the YouTube comments.
No.
You've been looking at the YouTube comments.
I had to answer two cunty comments. One was, hey, man, you know, love the show, but it'd be nice if you could even say hi to us first before you get into your ad reads. It's like, well, actually, fucking asshole, the companies pay us money specifically to be on a pre-roll ad. If we must pull the curtain aside, okay? So you're welcome for the free content. Oh, my God, you have to fast forward a minute in a fucking pop. Oh, my God, boo-hoo to you. Michael Bisping and Louis J. Gomez get to send their kids to college and do a podcast and make a little bit of cash. Boo. Who? What? I mean, I have such a new appreciation for commercials because my son complains about commercials. He'll tell me to fast forward when we like DVR stuff. I'm like, James, how do you think these people get paid? I really do. I'm like, you know, you watch these fucking commercials, because without these commercials, this wouldn't even be on TV and we wouldn't be able to watch it.
No, absolutely. 100%. Fuck, shit.
Drink.
Do a shot. Let's go. Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's what makes the world go round. But this show, I don't know. It was okay. I think the second half was all right. The first half, I wasn't too crazy about. I
feel 1 to 10.
Kind of like 6.
I say 10.
6.
I say 10.5. I
am a very harsh critic of myself. I always feel I could do better. I always feel I could be better prepared. I mean, I'm a busy man. I was doing Peloton. I was sweating like a motherfucker. I jumped down on here before we start the show. We're like, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? I promise you, I'm going to be on the phone this week and we're going to plan the shit out of Monday's show.
Look at me.
Oh, it's going to be crazy.
It's just a BYM drinking game. We're going to be hammered in an hour saying racist shit that we have to delete later.
We are going to plan that show so good. Oh, my God. I'm going to call you. I'm going to go on at you about DSLR lines. I'm going to call you and rabbit at you a million miles an hour and then hang up and not even say bye. Okay? That's what I'm going to do.
I actively said goodbye the last time. I purposely said goodbye.
Louis J. Gomez doesn't have correct phone etiquette. He does not know how to fucking say bye on the phone. I say, all right, Louis. Yeah, all right, then. That's cool. Yeah, take care. Deadline. Dead fucking line. It's like, are you really that busy? Are you that busy? You can't just say bye. All right, Mike. Nice talking to you. Have a good day. Bye bye.
I just feel like we're not chicks. We don't need the unnecessary extra words. You know, bye. I'll miss you. Whatever, dude. Whatever. We know. No, I said what I had to say. Click. The click is the goodbye. You hear the? That's the goodbye.
Yeah, but sometimes I'm still talking to myself. 30 fucking seconds. I'm like, Lewis, I'm like, this motherfucker's hung up again. You know, that's the issue I have, Lewis. I'm talking to a piece of plastic thinking I'm having a conversation.
All right, let's wrap it. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll check you next week. Believe you me. Peace.